Full Court Fits is The Ringer's new weekly NBA video series hosted by Big Woz, a.k.a. Wozni Lambre. Each week, we take you around the world of NBA fashion and share can't-miss style choices from your favorite players and keep you up to date on the latest news and releases in sneaker culture. Woz also talks to experts like Damian Lillard's personal stylist to give you behind-the-scenes looks at how the NBA's biggest stars choose their outfits. New episodes drop every Friday, so make sure you're subscribed to The Ringer's YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRinger so you never miss an episode.
This episode is brought to you by Mint Mobile. If you've had it with your overpriced wireless plan with its insanely high monthly bill and unexpected overages, then listen to this. For a limited time, wireless plans from Mint Mobile are $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan. That's unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month. Wow, right? To get this new customer offer, just go to mintmobile.com/watch. That's mintmobile.com/watch. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for more details.
There's no better feeling than a personal win. And the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
I need support staff to clear the room.
Stand up and walk. Now.
Hello and welcome to The Watch. My name is Chris Ryan. I am an editor at TheRinger.com, and joining me on the other line, he's wailing away. It's Andy Kramer.
You saved that one for days. I love it.
Oh, Andy, today we are going to be talking about The North Water, a television show starring Jack O'Connell, Colin Farrell, and Stephen Graham. It is currently streaming on AMC Plus. I believe it's available via... Was this a BBC show? This is BBC America streaming?
I think it's important to say this is a Laburo situation. If you kept Laburo, you have access to this show. It is the most Chris Core show since the late lamented Taboo. I can't wait to talk about
people
it.
People have been talking about my podcast that I did like a couple of was it a couple of months ago? Like, did I do it last Christmas or something? When did I do the like most anticipated shows of 2020? And
is
it was like, and I did it like
solo.
Podcast? Yeah, and I think I talked about The North Water on that one. It didn't come out in 2020. It's out in 2021. I think it's awesome. I can't wait to talk about it with Andy. I'm sure he's got a lot of takes on it. Andy, how are you doing? I think we should start out just by saying, how thankful and relieved we are to hear that Bob Odenkirk is feeling, is at least in stable condition after a heart-related incident on the set of Better Call Saul. We were all kind of on pins and needles yesterday following along with the news or waiting to hear some news about it.
That was one of the strangest days in recent memory. And I have to say, let's start with what you said. The degree of upset that I felt personally for someone that I've only met once that I don't know was surprising to me, and I think shared by hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people across the country. I think probably the strangest thing about the day, I mean, and we can talk about it now in past tense, because as you said, Chris, as of last night, the news reports is that he did have a, quote, heart-related incident. It sounds like some sort of a heart attack. He is stable and conscious in a hospital in Albuquerque, and so I think we can feel comfortable speaking about this now in the, you know, as a close call, a terrifying health scare, but he seems to be okay and he's going to be okay. Those are the words that his son, Nate, tweeted last night.
Mm-hmm.
Very unique 2021 day in that there was no news. We are, as a people, always pre-social media, not good with uncertainty.
Yeah.
Of course. I mean, that is the hardest thing for any person, especially in the modern world, to process or just sit with. We want to know everything.
For a second,
all the time.
I thought you were like, was no news at all yesterday. And I was like, I hate to break it to you. Some stuff has been happening.
Everything else seems fine. I don't know what you're talking about. As a big infrastructure guy, I was mainly focused on that. But do you know what I'm saying? How odd that was?
Oh, yeah, totally. Because it's usually just like weird leaks and speculation. And I honestly was almost like a little bit nervous because of the cone of silence that was sort of surrounding the entire
thing.
Right. And this is like, all besides the point. Like, it's not a meta commentary on the way we live now. Like, I'm just so happy that Bob Odenkirk is going to be okay. But it was very strange, like exactly you're saying. Like, usually, like when an NBA player goes down with an injury, there are like 50 tweets while the guy is still getting an MRI about what they think is going on with him and what might happen and how long he might be out and what this internet doctor thinks. Obviously, it's not the same thing for an actor who suffers a medical emergency, but the hours of no news was really weird.
Yeah, and I think it does speak to the gravity of the situation. And I'm sure when he and his family, if they ever do share details, I think it will be, it clearly was serious. But what was so disconcerting as people who have no right to know, he's a private person with a family and a life, was just that, if you think about it, very appropriate cone of silence, you know? And it was old-fashioned in a way. And I think that that also speaks to, I mean, who more qualified to call things old-fashioned than the two of us on the internet's most consistent old-fashioned pop culture podcast? But the affection and love and the outpouring of emotion that was visible on Twitter in the face of the uncertainty yesterday for Bob Odenkirk was itself kind of old-fashioned, because he is not, despite, you know, his fame growing exponentially over the last 10 years, he's not a TikTok star. He is not a particularly 21st century celebrity. He is a 58-year-old man who's had a very long and varied career with fans every step along the way. There are people who noticed his name when he was a writer on Saturday Night Live 30 years ago. There are people who are devotees of Mr. Show, the incredible groundbreaking sketch comedy show he did with David Cross. There are people who are fans of, you know, comedians he's mentored or sketch comedy shows he's produced. And then there's this late period, he's a beloved and actually pretty incredible dramatic actor, both in Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, and then showing up in Little Women and
The Post. Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe it's also because...
And also like I'm also burgeoning action star with...
Right.
Yeah, with nobody, yeah.
With nobody. And, you know, he is also a, by all accounts, a very kind and, you know, relatively private person. And the emotion for him was moving. I was surprised how moved I was by all of it. And then the next thing, just to say, now that, you know, he seems to be healthy, he's well, that is the headline. That's the only thing that truly matters. If we have the luxury of taking one step down too, there was, of course, in this terror and fear, of another very contemporary phenomenon, which was, we want the rest of our story.
Yeah, sure.
Right? I mean, it's too soon to talk about that. It does not matter in the face of actual medical emergency or the potential loss of a beloved family man and friend and mentor and actor and father. But I think people were panicked about that too.
Sure.
You know, and as we, I just want to put this thought out there, as all entertainment is now serialized entertainment with, you know, the goal of beginning a story or continuing a story or jumping on some IP to reinvent a story, there never is just one chapter, right? Like, everything is going to be a multi-part saga. And part of the investment is that everybody's going to be around to see the end of it.
Yeah.
And that was an extra piece on top of the emotional terror that people were feeling yesterday. Not nearly as important, but maybe people's connection to this person's life. And I think that was sort of noteworthy and worth commenting on.
I think that the fact that he was making Better Call Saul when this happened made it like sort of extra kind of sad.
In the final season of it.
Yeah, and they a season that they have had to wait to shoot because of COVID. And I think that they were kind of in that slot where they would have been shooting right when COVID was starting to go really, really wrong and everything was really getting shut down, and they had not come up with any kind of protocols of how to do this yet and how to restart making stuff. And, you know, I know that you know the areas that they were shooting in very well. I mean, obviously you were down in Albuquerque. So, I completely understand what you mean. I mean, like, it's not really like, what does this mean for Better Call Saul? It's more like, man, I just realized like how important this guy is to me and how important this show is to me. And I'm just so glad he's feeling a little bit better, apparently.
There's a piece of the way we process culture now where everything is the scroll that CNN invented on 9/11, where there's just a constant feed of information. And I think the constant feed of information leads to a kind of passivity about the inevitability of a narrative, that it's just going to happen this way. And we are not used to, and we do not like, honestly, we don't like being surprised. I mean, people say that we like to be surprised in movies or whatever, but we actually don't. We want to feel it coming. We want to feel a safe jump or jump scare or whatever. And not to get too grandiose, and this doesn't need to be the topic of today, but there was some overlap to me just in terms of the mania that I felt emanating from the Twitter machine, something I was very happy to step away from for most of the week, from something like, well, Simone Biles is supposed to win the gold medal. Mm-hmm. Well, Better Call Saul final season is going to come and be brilliant and blow us all away. All of these things are supposed to happen, and they're going to be delivered on time because I've been invested in every step along the way. But life doesn't work like that. Life doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
And we felt a kind of collective freak out about strangers over that very human reaction this week.
Have you been watching any Olympics?
More than I thought.
Yeah.
More than I thought. By the way, now that we're talking about the podiums, I should say that I don't even deserve to podium right now. I hope the audio is okay. We should have mentioned this at the beginning, but, you know, in the language of the North Water, the show we're going to talk about shortly, when I got off the boat to club some seals to death, my podcast rig didn't make it back on the boat. It's been identified by a penguin who is going to give it to me.
You think that this is a podcast, Andy? This is actually a laudanum intervention for you, because I think you've been hitting the bottle a little hard, and now you're just forgetting microphones in different Northeast cities.
So Chris and I are recording kind of, as you know, doing the best we can. And
we're guided by
Kai's
voices today. We're lo-fi, I'm bouncing tracks off of one another.
Yeah. We apologize for the audio fidelity.
Yeah, Andy and I have basically been like ships passing in the night again, Northwater, on the East Coast for the last 10 days. So now I'm back in Philadelphia. Andy's up in New York. And
But to answer your question about the Olympics, I do want to say, Chris, how big a fan are you? I mean, just like 1 to 10, you know, because I know a lot about you. I feel like I know a lot about your viewing habits, but sometimes you do still surprise me. Like, how up are you on the intricacies of street skating on a competitive level?
Oh, I mean, I like some of the fashion choices those guys are making, but I have no idea what they're doing. And that is actually weirdly a sport where, like, watching them do it completely isolated and alone in like this giant man-made bowl is kind of strange. I do like myself some Olympics, and my mom is a huge, huge, huge Olympics fan. So like the second I drove from Portland to Philly yesterday, Portland, Maine to Philly yesterday. And like the second I walked in the door, my mom had like both barrels up, like Olympic takes ready for me, and just went like unchecked for, honestly, like I would leave the room, come back in, and she would be like, and then this lovely Australian was in the breaststroke finals, and I thought that they were going to win, and I was just like, oh my God, man, like this is really, like I'm getting the full download.
See, because we live in a bubble from it. We've not been watching it.
Okay.
We're actually currently staying in a place that doesn't have a TV. There are still people like that. And I did have a moment though yesterday evening to fire up the Peacock app and watch things totally out of sync with reality. But I did watch some street skate with my children, which I highly recommend.
Well, you are because a Tony Hawk skate alumnus.
It was very calming and soothing as someone who loved to play the Tony Hawk video games, just rolling around in an abandoned swimming pool on a PlayStation 2 screen somewhere. Also, huge Betty vibes. Really about the same amount of plot in the HBO show Betty as there was in the Olympic street skate with no one in the crowd. The other thing, and this is a little Daddington Island pro tip, and I'm sure people know about this because this may have happened like 7 days ago. Peacock is not super into telling you, like giving you timestamps on the events you're watching. Watching the gold medal women's street skate final, or whatever you call it, the competitors, and in fact, the two top medalists are marginally older than my children.
Seriously, yeah.
Two 13-year-olds, bat mitzvahs, basically, in the language of my people, are just up there shredding rails. And it's just kind of incredible that these young girls wearing Vans and giggling are just now Olympic athletes too. And I'm very, very here for it. It was a very calming and soothing exercise.
It's funny you mentioned the Peacock thing, because this was the raison d'etre of Peacock, right?
Yes.
Is getting this thing up for the Olympics, was to make it basically a streaming hub for the Olympics. Wasn't that Comcast's big kind of, that was their big gambit, was like, we're going to have the Olympics. And, you know, I have to admit, like, there are ways in which it's pretty cool. Like, you know, my mom has Xfinity or whatever, like the Comcast thing here. So you basically, there is like a hub where I agree with you somewhat. divorced from time and space. You can watch anything, and you can watch, you can click on the sport that you want, and it'll just shoot clips at you and everything. But they are, because it's in Japan, this is one of those games where you have to pretend all day like you don't know what's happened if you want to enjoy it in prime time. So you either have to like just kind of seal yourself off from ESPN and the news or whatever, or, and especially Twitter, because people are just like, she won. And you're like, that's definitely going to be on at 10 p.m. My guy.
did you have to turn off your archery alerts on your
all
phone?
Of them, I know all of them.
Year round, you're always updated on the latest.
And let me tell you, those things, it's hard to ask those apps not to track. It's kind of the whole point.
All of the summer sports.
Yeah.
Do you miss, the Peacock thing, I just want to say one more thing about it, which was when I fired it up to watch whatever, because I asked, do you want to watch the Olympics? Yeah, that sounds great. They were excited. I did think there would be like a whatever's happening right now button. Mm-hmm. And I did not see that. Maybe there's a different hub somewhere, but on Peacock, it's just basically like, are you interested in water polo? Because here it is from some point in calendar year 2021. That feeling of immediacy, but of course that immediacy was always an illusion, because when you and I were growing up, I mean, the first Olympics I really remember watching, it also probably worth noting, did not have that massive time zone issue, were the 84 Olympics from LA.
Yeah.
And we were both on the East Coast, but you know, the experience of the Olympics as a communal event where at 8 p.m. every night, Bob Costas would like sit down and look at you and hopefully his eye health was up to par. You remember that? That was an odd year.
I do remember that.
But basically be like, okay, here we go. And mm-hmm. they'd curated it and packaged it, and you'd watch the most exciting parts of anything, and you'd jump around, and I'd, you know, go to bed being like, whoa, that was a dramatic night of television. Mm-hmm. Curated, almost scripted television. And now, you know, this is a perfect metaphor for our times. So we have absolutely everything all the time.
And I have no idea what's going on.
And very few shared filters of how to understand it.
Yeah, I think some of it is a time zone thing for people in the States. I mean, like, you know, the London Olympics, I thought, was a really, really fun games, and mm-hmm. you know, that was like the LeBron basketball team, Phelps, Bolt, like it had like a really, really great storylines and a really great vibe. I thought the opening ceremony mm-hmm. was really cool. Danny Boyle did a lot of it. Like it was really like, and it was in LA, the London primetime was like on during the day for us. So it was like, you got to see that stuff live. I do think that the sort of like breaking everything down into its component parts and giving it, making it so that you can watch absolutely, like if you want to watch water polo, like semifinal or like any swimming heat, you can. But there is something kind of old school and pleasurable about the like, turn it on 8 p.m., there's Tirico, and then it's going to be 4 hours or however long of coverage. Now, it is bone-crushingly slow to watch that stuff sometimes where they're just like, yep, we're about to get ready for the heat three of the breaststroke. But first, like this guy's dog plays the drums and that's why he's made it all the way to Tokyo. And it's like, you're just like, holy shit, I can't believe there's another human interest story. I kind of do want to go to Peacock and just and watch heptathlon or something. I think it might be winter, though.
I think the other thing about it, though, that I was happy about was the, again, very 2021, the story, the meta story about the Olympics, you know, delayed a year, COVID riddled in all senses. Why are we doing this?
Right.
The gross, you know, politicization of everything, culture war, left me feeling like I didn't even want to engage. And then we did turn on, in addition to the street skating, we watched the women's gymnastics final. And at the end of it, these women are incredible athletes. And I can't believe people do this. And I found that to be a very pure and enjoyable reaction. And maybe part of that was watching it with my children who had never seen anybody do the uneven bars. But it was nice that at the end of it, and once you find the app and you download it and you click on the right thing and it doesn't crash or whatever, yeah, that's human beings still pretty good at stuff.
Yeah.
That was a good watch. So good job by you, Olympics.
Do you want to talk a little bit? I wanted to talk to you a little bit about movies before we got to Northwater.
Yeah. You know, everyone knows I love movies.
I went to the movies for the first time since, I guess it would have been late February, early March 2020, right? Like, I guess, yeah, I went to the movies. I went and saw Old at a movie theater
Fantastic.
In Falmouth, Maine. And let me tell you something. I don't, this may or may not happen to you when you've been to the movies though, right? Like, didn't you go to like a animated movie?
The rest of my family
okay.
went and saw Spirit, the horse movie. I did not.
Right.
I did not. Crippling fear of animated horses.
But was it actually because you were just like, I'm not ready to go back to the movie theater? Or were you just like, I got other stuff to do?
I was like, I could use this time to work. So okay. Please enjoy the horses.
So I went so old. Here's the thing I'm not ready for.
Okay.
Concession stand decisions.
Mm.
Because I walked in, first of all, I had an amazing dinner at this place called Central Provisions, which kind of does a mid-coast spin on Basque small plates. Incredible restaurant.
I love who you've become. I treasure it.
I highly recommend the fried polenta cake. And then we're there. And here's what happens like when you're on vacation in America in 2021. All the tables are booked. Somebody came and booked all the tables in advance. So you're kind of like, you go up to the hostess or the maitre d' or whatever at like 5 o'clock when the restaurant opens and you're just like, what can you do for me? maybe you flash a little bit of a five in your palm. Like,
do you?
Just,
oh, a five. Well,
no,
you're going to
no,
get
I'm just kidding. I'm not bribing
kind of cheddar.
But you're just like, you know, like I would like love to walk in. Could be 9 o'clock. Could be 5:15. You never know until you go and ask, right? Because like nobody's picking up the phone in America anymore. So you just go to the restaurant. So we had dinner, a big dinner. I had a white Negroni. I was feeling great. Mm-hmm. And then we finished dinner and it was 6:30 p.m. So we were like, what are we going to do? What are we going to do with the rest of our night? So,
by the way, I laugh. I have booked multiple 5:45 p.m. dinner reservations, but that's one of the many ways that my life is different from the life of Chris Ryan, a.k.a. the white Negroni.
And then so then we were like, let's go to the movies. So we went out there, and after eating a sizable meal, I would say, including dessert, get to the movie theater. We're back in business. And this is a fun movie theater. It's got like recliners and stuff. I go popcorn, a little bit of butter, Goobers, Pepsi, bottle water.
Wow.
Yeah.
Chris, was it kind of a mid-coast spin on popcorn and Goobers, or was it straight up
it was
and
more,
down the middle?
More like? Of a Basque spin on Goobers.
Yeah.
It's kind of small. Just a couple of Goobers and then like a little drizzle of like a sardine oil.
Did the concession guy say, let me tell you how our menu works? Have you dined with us before? We encourage sharing.
Yeah.
Great stuff.
It's kind of rustic, so there's just a couple snow caps. We just throw them out there. You guys can pick them up. No, it was a lot of fun to be back in the movies. Old is very bizarre because it's a really good idea for a movie that seems to be dubbed. Like the dialogue is so weird in this movie, but I don't want to like spoil anything about it in case people still haven't gotten a chance to see it. But the movies are back, and then you know I did want to talk to you a little bit about a couple of the trailers that we have missed.
Wait, Chris, we're going to talk trailers, but we got to go back to Basque Country for a second because I feel like before we created the image of a concessionaire, a pimply concessionaire tweezing jujubes onto a tray, I feel like you've left our listeners hanging a little bit because longtime watch aficionados know that you and the concession stands, they're not always a harmonious combo. You coined the term popcorn tum-tum on this podcast once. And now you're telling me that you ate like a Basque fisherman and then ordered savory and sweet?
Yeah.
With a adult size.
First of
cola.
All, I think I've told you this before and I'll tell you this again. The order at the movie theater is to get something chocolate with popcorn.
I am a purist. I just like my popcorn. But I'm not a sweets guy. But so I know that you don't need to explain the thinking behind
your
order.
Shout out to my guy Mike and Ike, Sean Fennessy. Just absolute the candy king.
He's the Ike to your Mike.
He is the candy man. When you say that three times, Sean shows up with some Sour Patch Kids.
And he slaps the pretzel bites with hot cheese sauce out of your hands.
Yes. Exactly.
And he's like, it's junior mints or bust. But how were you feeling? Obviously, you were thrilled and excited and maybe a little bit buzzed on gin, but like, did...
White Negroni made with silver tequila, actually.
Oh, beautiful. But Chris, you're like the characters in the movie Old after 20 minutes on the beach. You are a calendar year older than you were the last time you were in the movie theater.
What?
Are you okay?
I was totally fine, and I wonder whether it was just my pure enthusiasm for film that got me through, you know? It was my love of cinema and seeing films the way they are meant to be seen in a theater with a bunch of teenagers from Falmouth, Maine.
And watching a movie made by Sixers ticket holder, season ticket holder M. Night Shyamalan, I feel like also, you know, he's operating in, you may not recognize the cadence of the dialogue in the film, but as a Sixer fan, it's in your love language.
Yeah. Did you, I know you would never see this movie anyway, because it's mildly scary. You read the Wikipedia entry about it, right?
I am so proud of and happy for our friend Mina Kimes, who has normalized what has been a secretive, clandestine lifestyle choice for many of us in the scaredy cat community, which is to terrorize ourselves just by reading the Wikipedia page of scary movies. I feel like Rob Harvilla did this as well with Hereditary, a film I will never see, and a Wikipedia page I will never look at again.
There was an article actually the other day about how like the dude who played the son in Hereditary is like, I'm still fucked up from being in Hereditary.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Why does everyone think these are victimless crimes? So Mina was tweeting that like, she can't wait until the plot synopsis drops on the old wiki so she could read it. And yeah. that was a nice 2.5 minutes of my life. And I feel like, yeah, good concept. Very cool.
I was curious as, because this movie is literally set on Daddington Island.
Right.
I was curious whether there's any element of you that's like, you're telling me there's a beach where my kids might grow up and move out faster.
Absolutely not.
No.
But
These are the years you cherish. Yeah.
Yes. 5:30 p.m. dinners. I mean, we're not doing this one on video, but Chris can count the concentric rings around my eyes right now to see how many hours of sleep I haven't
gotten as we've moved
around the East Coast.
An old bisected redwood.
Also, as anyone who has seen the color of my hair over the last 4 years knows that having a second child is basically like buying beachfront property on Old Island.
We're becoming, it's like Obama as president. Just like,
I do. Thank you for saying that. You know, yeah. I can't say that about myself, but I do think that the pressures on me are similar.
Wasn't it weird did you ever notice that Trump didn't really change in the 4 years? Like all the other guys are like, they go from like this, like, he's like, here I am, I'm a young buck, or not, you know, certain people's cases, but for the most part, like they come in and they're like, you know, Brock just looked great. Just like this swagger senator from Illinois. And then like, it was just like grizzled listening to Springsteen by the end, which Trump didn't really like get older.
Clinton, remember when Clinton ran for president and he was just like eating McDonald's and playing saxophone?
Yeah.
And then by the time he was done, he spoke like a character in Martin Scorsese's Silence.
No, he was like he was like
only ate grain bowls.
Saruman by the end.
So, but wait, I do have to take a little issue with your initial question. Was your initial question actually, isn't it weird that Trump's hair color didn't change?
No, just like in general, like he seems, of all the things, I mean, like there was the COVID thing, but like he more or less seems like,
Chris,
I'm not saying this is cool. I'm not saying I'm like,
Chris, if you love what you do, it's really dope how he didn't get older. If you love what you do, you never work a day in your life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And my guy loves eating hamburgers and watching cable news. Like, I don't think his life changed that much.
That's right.
I think that is the proof's in the pudding. Before we get to the movie trailers, last Daddington thing. I did, as you alluded to, I was in our great hometown of Philadelphia, and really, unlike past visits, and obviously I hadn't been back for a year and a half because of the pandemic or more than that, I was like, boy, this city's really exploding. There's great food here, and really enjoyed a lot of the historical stuff around Betsy Ross House and Independence Hall. And I was like, good for me for really taking advantage of those things. And then someone did point out to me that good for my children for maturing and aging in a normal way and thus being able to enjoy things like dinner and Betsy Ross's house.
Yeah.
So there are some advantages, but you don't want to buy that beachfront property on Old Island. That's my point.
This episode is brought to you by Mint Mobile. If you've had it with your overpriced wireless plan with its insanely high monthly bill and unexpected overages, then listen to this. For a limited time, wireless plans from Mint Mobile are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan. That's unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month. Wow, right? To get this new customer offer, just go to mintmobile.com/watch. That's mintmobile.com/watch. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for more details.
Sweat. You mean armpit tears of weakness brought about by poor deodorant choices? Say goodbye to that salty river that floweth from your underarm with Old Spice Swagger Antiperspirant. Made for 24/7 sweat protection with daily use and an undeniable smell of cedarwood and lime. Giving you the confidence you need to quit your job, move to a remote island, and spend your days frolicking with dolphins. Old Spice Swagger Antiperspirant. Shop Old Spice now.
Speaking of things that make me feel old, let's talk about two movie trailers for remakes.
Yeah, so I wanted to talk to you about the Ghostbusters trailer. This came out last week. Yeah. I think everybody, the take economy has already boomed and busted on this one. But I didn't get the memo that this was, at least in vibe and like look and feel, going to be, essentially like almost note for note, feels like the Stranger Things trailer from the first season, but also like the Super 8 trailer, also just basically Spielberg karaoke in a way that may very well be very satisfying, because I certainly respond to that. But I was struck by just how they essentially like surgically removed the thing that as a kid I actually responded to in Ghostbusters, which is the deep corroded, scabbed over cynicism. And I imagine that Bill Murray will make an appearance in this movie. I think he is. There's like a sort of flash of Dan Aykroyd at the end of the trailer. Obviously Harold Ramis passed away, so he looms over the movie but isn't in it. But I was like, maybe this is the next frontier of this stuff, is to like make, maybe we should make like sincere emo Fletch, you know, like the next frontier of IP reimagining is like, let's just take the thing that made this special and like remove it.
That's all everything is now. And it's funny, both of us wanted to approach this with the same caveats. So big picture, I apologize. I was busy, I guess. I had no awareness that a trailer for this movie dropped at the end of 2019 and that this was the second one. I watched the first one first, was ready to fire off the take cannons, and then watched the new one. Takes were the same, but I apologize. So not only am I a week late, I'm a year plus late. I think that this movie very well could succeed on the terms that it sets out to succeed on. I think that people...
Fun cast, Carrie Coon, Paul Rudd, Finn Wolfhard, you know.
People might really, really like it. It might be very good. I think it's also worth noting that for as much as I'm about to complain about the fact that everything needs to be, you know, a tender coming of age generational inheritance story, the film itself on a meta level is that, because Jason Reitman, who's our age, has taken over this franchise essentially from his father, Ivan Reitman, who wrote or co-wrote and directed the first two movies. So that's baked in. That's what this project is. And I think that adds a level of sincerity, quite frankly, to the framing, because that's what interested him in taking on this legacy from his father and the success that he grew up around, surrounded by as a kid. That said, I hate it, and I hate it a lot. Because I think I mean this, and I apologize to Jason Reitman, who is probably a great guy and is an interesting and worthwhile filmmaker. And again, this is a project that makes sense for him. I'm not casting aspersions as to why he would do this.
Yeah, no, totally.
I don't think it's cynical, but
that might be the problem.
Exactly. Culturally, this is as concerning to me as the amount of people not wearing masks indoors that I see all the time. It is, because the thing about Ghostbusters that no one seems to remember is what you said, which is that it is an insane movie for adults about cranky assholes chain smoking, making sex jokes with ghosts around them. It's ridiculous. It's a raunchy late 70s comedy
where the villain is the Environmental Protection Agency.
Yes. And let's also remember that what has aged the best in that movie, or the worst, I guess, depending, but to me the best, is Bill Murray's scene when Sigourney Weaver is levitating off of the bed and he's just riffing is so funny. It's so funny. And, you know, I'm not saying that you and I are poster children for 80s babies who ended up well or whatever, but like being taken to the movies, that movie in the theaters in 1984, being more scared than I've ever been in the opening library scene, and then being more just like confused and thrilled and titillated by the rest of it was a foundational thing. And the idea now that everything from our childhood is worthy, not just worthy of being reimagined or rebooted or whatever, because that ship has sailed, we get it, but that everything from our childhood has become the packaged, wrapped, mint-conditioned toys on Steve Carell's wall in The 40-Year-Old Virgin and needs to be treated as reverently.
Yeah.
Is crazy.
Yeah.
This is not a reboot of Ghostbusters. This is a reboot of a cultural memory.
It's a movie about the idea of Ghostbusters. There's in the second season of Stranger Things, in the trailer, you if you remember, there's this whole thing where they're, as for Halloween, they go as Ghostbusters, the kids.
Yes.
The reason that they do that is because when we were kids at that age, at that time, we were obsessed with Ghostbusters. The reason we were obsessed with Ghostbusters was because it was so funny and so illicit. Like, Ghostbusters is a kind of like, I think, at least, like, it, a lot of the monsters in Ghostbusters are jokes. You know, like, they're...
Yes.
They're like, I accidentally dreamt of this thing, or there's Zool, and you're just like, come on. Like, when Zool pops up, they're like, really? Seriously, Zool? You know, like, and all the stuff with the gatekeeper, the keymaster.
Rick Moranis,
yeah,
and the
it's
dogs.
All fucking funny, yeah.
And the marshmallow thing was about Dan Aykroyd's character having an innocuous memory that
yes.
turns into a nightmare.
Yes.
Culturally, for our generation, maybe it would be the Kool-Aid man suddenly growing fangs and murdering people or whatever. I don't know. Who's the snap into a Slim Jim guy?
Randy Savage?
Randy Savage popping out of a cloud or whatever.
Yeah, like, right.
That's what's funny about it. But now it is actually just about itself. So there was one big marshmallow in the first movie. Now there's 50 and they're kind of cute and funny
right.
or whatever. And to your point, Stranger Things, and it's a choice to cast the main kid from Stranger Things in this Ghostbusters movie, is this. It is the kind of neutered down, backwards looking, culturally saturated nostalgia version of what we remember something to be. But now everything is that.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Super 8, which was J.J. Abrams not saying, I'm going to make a movie that makes sense to me as an heir to Spielberg. I'm literally going to make a Spielberg movie.
Right.
And the new Star Wars movie, also J.J. Abrams, being like, we're just going to lightly remix what worked the first time. We're not going to think about what would a Han Solo wisecracking in space be, you know, someone who shoots first. We're not going to do any of that. We're just going to keep everything wrapped in Mylar. And it's a huge bummer. And I think that it would be exciting to see some kind of original IP aimed at that sweet spot of 8 to 15-year-olds, but from a 2021 perspective, meaning it's not just aimed at 8-year-old boys who look like us.
Mm-hmm.
It could be aimed at boys and girls. It could be aimed at, you know, it could be coming from different cultural places in America. I'd like to see that. I kind of hate the fact that mainstream quote-unquote entertainment has to be good and be about becoming a better person and kids having adventures or whatever. And then where do you get the titillating stuff? Do you Pornhub? I mean,
Ozark?
Truly,
like, I don't know. Yeah,
is that? Are we at that level of an either
right.
or situation?
Right,
for
you're either
That's
like
bummer.
I am watching like weird like ET 74 times removed, or something
yes.
that no human should actually lay their eyes on.
And somehow everyone in third grade has seen it already. Exactly.
Right.
That's what I'm talking about when I think that it's broken as a movie and as an exercise. I mean, I hope that it entertains a lot of people. It
yeah.
seems like it was made to with heart and affection, and sure. But come on, man.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in some ways, here's the counter you could make, is that the okay. lightning in a bottle act of Ghostbusters, the fact that they basically made a hysterical comedy about how frustrating it is to live in New York City
yeah.
and then just kind of slapped ghosts on top of it. You just can't do that. Like, you just can't. That is those guys and Annie Potts and Sigourney Weaver making something very special in that moment and then it just actually getting out of control, which is what happened to a lot of blockbusters in the 80s, where it was like you try and then you do something you thought was good, and then all of a sudden weirdly, like, every kid in America wanted to wear that jumpsuit and have that station wagon.
It's also that the movie, as you said, is about nerds and losers.
Yes.
There is no one in Ghostbusters or Ghostbusters 2 that is just like, wow, Egon Spengler actually is our savior.
Right.
Or a genius. Like, reverentially talking about him. Like, he's left us a legacy here.
Right.
Everyone's just, I mean, it's just insane 80s New York. Everyone's like, well, these dorks saved us. Now what's Ed Koch said next? Let's move on. Like, there is this, it's not a Sokovia situation. You know what I mean? And it didn't need to be, but everything has to be now. And it is an interesting pivot that the other movie we're talking about, and I imagine we're going to talk about it in fonder or more exciting terms, is also a reboot of a mid-80s film.
But it's also, it's really funny because, like, Dune is coming. That's the movie we're talking about is Dune, and the new trailer for Dune came out last week as well. It looks incredible. It looks like a Denis Villeneuve movie. It has elements of Arrival in it. You can see kind of like his sort of sci-fi mind is very clearly defined. All of the, like, kind of, this one really emphasizes the ensemble and like Momoa and Brolin and Oscar Isaac and Rebecca Ferguson all look incredible in this. But it's so funny how many eggs I have in the Dune basket, because I'm like somehow Dune is like the last vestige of original Hollywood filmmaking, even though it is,
yes,
the second time they've tried to make this as a movie. They made it as a series a few years ago on Sci-Fi. It is largely, like, considered to be an unfilmable book. So they're going to try and break this into two movies, I think. And also there is already a Ladies of Dune, right? What is it?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, like there's a Dune spinoff on HBO Max. So, yeah, I mean, I thought it looked incredible, but I have noticed with growing interest how much, like, pressure seems to be on Dune to be...
There's a lot of pressure
great.
On this.
Yeah.
It's very easy to imagine a world where this is a catastrophe. Not creatively,
right?
But from a financial perspective, which is not how we want to engage with this movie, but... It does feel a little creaky around the joints, because what it's attempting to do, right, is to be the exception that maybe allows the rule. Meaning, this is a Denis Villeneuve film. This right. is a film made by an auteur filmmaker. We will see his new movie no matter what it is. And he now has the full resources of a company that generally spends this amount of money to recreate Krypton, you know, during Zack Snyder reshoots or whatever.
Right.
And he gets the greatest cast. When we talked about the trailer the first time, I mean, everyone you just named, I mean, you didn't even mention Chalamet or Zendaya. Like,
right.
you put these people in a movie, I'm going to see this movie. This is a phenomenal cast. And there is an element of watching this trailer of... It's, you know, it's like watching an all-star game. Like, I'm not even sure what scoring means, and I'm not even sure if I care who wins,
right.
but I love seeing these players out on the floor together. So that's all there, but it is still in the service of propping up a potential new IP tent for Warner Brothers. I mean, as you said, there's already a spinoff show, and it is based on this book that is legendary and beloved among its fans. Very curious who those fans of the book are in 2021 and what they look like. I mean, I am generally Dune ignorant. I mean, I've seen the David
sure.
Lynch movie twice, but not for a long time. I remember Spice. I remember the fat guy in the suit floating. And I remember the pain box, which is what I call Twitter. But it is about moons and spice worms. You know, that is not Hollywood stuff,
sure.
generally mainstream.
But who
stuff.
Knows if I had, like, told you the plot of Game of Thrones in
exactly.
2010, you might have been like, oh, I don't know.
It doesn't fit easily into into a binary narrative of what Hollywood is doing is cynical and bad, and we wished for a return to a different era. I mean, this is also this always was the era. I mean, Cleopatra was a giant swollen blockbuster too, right? It's mm-hmm. it's just the IP expectations of it, and you and I are trying to come at this with unspiced minds being like, oh my God, like, Oscar Isaac is asking Timothy Chalamet if he wants to have a catch on a sand planet. So, okay, we're going to go see it. Cool trailer. Looks beautiful. Sounds incredible. Even the sound design and music, but what a weird one.
Yeah.
What a weird one. And then and then how are we even going to process it when it comes out? Because we don't know where we'll be at societally. Is it going to be on HBO Max?
Well, it's going to be cannibalized? I think it's still going to be day and date HBO Max. I just think that they're going to... I think that now, like, you know, Jungle Cruise is coming out this week. I think that there has been some, like, nervousness about the box office numbers, even though Black Widow obviously is also available on a streaming service. Like, I think people are starting to get a little jumpy about the fact that, and as everybody has a right to be jumpy, because we've also been given this information that maybe we shouldn't be hanging out, yes, in movie theaters together without our masks on. So it's just such a confusing time, and they're trying to keep this industry propped up.
Can I borrow your industry guy, deep thinker, Jonas Era glasses for a second?
For sure.
And just make a general pitch to Hollywood. What if your blockbuster wasn't about a young boy or man who was special? Like, I what if? Now, I know that runs contra to all the billion-dollar grocers, you know, especially because of the Marvel movies.
Yeah.
But, like, what if? You know what I mean? Because just to go back to Ghostbusters for a second, the thing that was great about that is that those dudes were middle-aged losers.
Yeah.
Said the middle-aged loser on
no,
the podcast.
No, but we saw... I mean, but the thing was is that, like, that we saw that movie when we were, like, eight or whatever... And we were like, yeah, I want to be that. I want to be... Yeah.
Bill Murray is cool.
Yeah. That's I don't want to be Finn Wolfhard. No offense to Finn Wolfhard. I want to be like this balding cynic. And I got my wish.
You did it. You did it. You get a ghost trap. So it's just that piece of it. And that's why, look, I'm under no illusions. That's why Warner Brothers put a quarter billion into this movie, Dune. Because if you squint, it's just Spider-Man again on the sand. But yeah, can we just try, I'm not even asking for 250 million, and I'm not personally asking. I'm just saying,
yeah, like
shave 100 mil off the top and give it to somebody
else.
What if we just had
a lawyer take an unwinnable case? You know what I mean? Like,
oh my God.
How about that?
Now you're talking.
You know, what about a cop who goes off the rails trying to solve a crime?
You know, like, let me stop you there. Is it a child lawyer? Is it a Doogie Howser? But
see, that's the thing, though.
Situation?
Are we being assholes? Like, isn't it? Is that just what A Few Good Men is? Is this boy who becomes a man? You know what I mean? Like, it's hard to get away from.
Yeah, I mean, Joseph Campbell is nodding his head somewhere on Mount Olympus. Yes, that those are stories, but that is just so that the Campbell thing, the Campbell myth, the Star Wars thing. It's just... Oh, God, it's just exhausting at this point. It's exhausting.
I don't know if the North Water adheres to the Campbell myth. Do you want to do that?
No. I was thinking about a way into it. If you want a show about cynical middle-aged men doing stuff.
Okay, so this show is streaming on AMC+. It's I think it's BBC Two is where it originally aired or where it originally airs, and it's a co-pro. Obviously, it's written and directed by Andrew Hay, who's also the creator of the show. It's based on a novel by Ian McGuire. Here's the deal. It's 1859 in England, and a surgeon, a disgraced surgeon played by Jack O'Connell, joins up with a whaling vessel leaving Hull, England. And that vessel is captained by a guy named Brownlee, who's played by Stephen Graham, who's one of my favorite character actors. And
you may remember him as Al Capone in Boardwalk Empire.
Yeah, and then he was also famously in The Irishman, in one of the best scenes in The Irishman. And then is also populated by a rogues gallery, and maybe no man more rogue in the history of humanity than Colin Farrell as a whaling harpoon, a harpoonist?
Harpoon specialist
named Henry Drax, D-R-A-X.
Yeah.
And this is one of those shows where I kind of needle Andy to watch after a while. I've seen two episodes. I believe three are available on AMC Plus right now. I've needled Andy. No, just two?
I think
just
only two.
Yeah. Only two episodes. I've needled Andy to watch it. It's like, yes, I'll do that. And then I get nothing. No sneak peek of the takes. I will say the show is not for the weak of stomach or heart. But I'm very curious to know what you think.
I'm going to just say this to our audience. If you are one of the people who gets the WWF catalog and not the wrestling, I mean the World Wildlife Foundation, and you see that if you donate $9.99, you could choose a stuffed animal of replica of the animal that you have donated to help save and preserve. And if the animal you've chosen is, for example, a baby seal, which happens, I'm just going to give you the biggest trigger warning, trigger of an 1859 era appropriate rifle.
Yeah.
And say, this isn't your show.
Nope.
That's cool. No harm, no foul.
Well, except for the seals.
They are harmed, they and took, it's foul.
There's some contact under the rim for those
guys.
Yeah,
they're playing like the EuroLeague rules in terms of contact. Chris, the reason there was no feedback is because, you know, traveling with family, not in our home where there's television. So it didn't fire up the show until 10:30 p.m., so I didn't want to disturb you because I know you need your eight hours. You know what I mean? In especially if you're going to be boarding a whaling vessel in the morning. When you checked in with me this morning, I did reply. I don't want people to think that I was ghosting you. I replied first with the stunned face emoji, and then two seal emojis followed by a skull. So that I want you to know that was proof that I'd watched the show. I'm going to watch the show. I'm on board, and I respect it, and I even liked it. And one of the reasons why I respect it is that Andrew Hayes, a filmmaker who I like a lot, he made the HBO show Looking. He made a classic film, romantic film called Weekend. A filmmaker who is famous for, highly regarded and known for telling gay love stories, in addition to other kinds of stories, focusing on this hyper macho masculinity and violence of this era is fascinating. And his commitment, he wrote and directed this, as you said, based on a book, that makes it immediately compelling to me. And you can tell. I mean, it is beautifully directed. I mean, it is considered.
So that's the number one thing. You know, I know that a lot of people might have trouble stomaching some of the stuff that happens on screen in the show. This is like elite filmmaking. The first episode is full of these like wandering tracking shots throughout a recreation or perhaps on location or using a stand-in city to recreate mid-19th century Hull. And it's, you know, going down these alleys and into these sort of doorways and into pubs and into apothecaries and onto docks and then onto the boat. And it's breathtaking. And it creates this warren of like vice and sin and moral compromise that obviously they're going to take out into these wide open spaces of the Shetland Islands and then I guess Greenland.
Yes. And I think that it's important to say that, like, for people who, you know, I know I'm not the only one who has, you know, itchy pilot trigger finger. Like, when shows begin, they try to tell you who they are and what they are. And sometimes that can be off-putting if you're not expecting it. And this show begins where Spinal Tap's Amps begin at 11. I mean, black screen, Colin Farrell rutting, there's no other word for it, with a prostitute, and then stumbling through the streets of Hull, where in the background children are kicking and poking at a dead dog with a stick.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh boy. The thing is, though, this isn't a bit. There's full commitment to it. This is the world of the show. And so it is actually an appropriately chosen beginning, and you are now in it, and you are not going to be not in it for a while. I think that it's worth saying, Chris, that, you know, sometimes also people, I'm not the only one, when approaching a show, like, looks for a point of view character, right? Or like, how can I find myself in this show emotionally so that I can keep my balance and sort of understand how to process what I'm watching? And, you know, I have never shot a seal, chased it across an ice floe, clubbed it to death, then used a knife to slice its skin off. I've never done it. And I'm okay admitting that, you know, just like I told you, I'd never seen Apocalypse Now. Like, this is a safe space.
Sure.
However, there was a moment in the pilot, and this is not a spoiler if you haven't watched it, because as we said, it's so far it's just this disgraced surgeon.
It's just guys being dudes.
it's just dude stuff. But yet, you joke, but there was a moment where I was like, okay, I've been there. I have been exactly there. And I don't know if you noted this moment as well, but there's a moment when Jack O'Connell plays the disgraced surgeon who dresses like he's starring in Downhill Racer in 1969 or something. Just beautiful, just beautiful,
incredible turtlenecks.
Coats.
Yeah.
He is invited for a night out before they go club seals to death and eventually whales. And so there's a moment when he, dressed like a dandy on Carnaby Street in 1969, gets on a dinghy with Colin Farrell and the first mate and another guy from the ship. And on this boat, there are four individual men going for a night out on the town. Mm-hmm. And one of the men is only thinking about scoring, about finding a lady. As he says some memorable things that I'm not going to say, but he's very, very single-minded in what he's after.
Yeah.
Okay. Another man is equally single-minded about getting extremely drunk and belligerent as quickly as possible.
Right.
The third guy just wants to talk to the other guy a lot about his plans and his future.
And drinking
and
ginger
beer. And the fourth
beer.
Guy wearing the turtleneck is like, I've committed to this. And I'm just going to have to see it through. And I got to tell you, Chris, I feel like I've been on that dinghy, especially in New York City between the years of 2002 and 2007. I really related to that.
Yeah.
I really related to being wildly overdressed and not ready for what was about to pop up.
It's just, it's the Second Avenue subway station.
It really was. I was there. So I do think the show has something to say about, if not contemporary masculinity, at least something contemporary.
You should also watch the show because Colin Farrell is going for it. It is actually a really great combination of obviously some, I guess you could call it scene chewing. You could just, it's a very notable performance. Like this guy, he speaks of the very distinct cadence and accent and is essentially, I would say probably he's an illiterate murderer is what I would describe Henry Drax as. Both of beast, both ambulatory and seal like. But he is so fully committed both physically and emotionally to this sort of situation, this scene. But the amazing thing is that Hay is not shooting him like he's Jack Nicholson in A Few Good Men, where it's like everybody right. clear out for Colin Farrell's close up as he gives a uncannily articulate speech about his character or something. He is a caveman dragging knuckles around the Shetland Islands, and Hay puts him in the shadows. Like he's like, mm-hmm. this is the guy that lurks in the darkness. This is the guy you don't want to meet at the end of the alley. This is the guy that you don't want to be at last call with or first call because he's already drunk. And yeah, I think you know, people are probably like, you guys have talked about this show for 10, 15 minutes now. We haven't really said what it's about. I don't really know. It's about, you know, these guys are on this vessel. I don't want to give it away, but you know, we talked, I think a little bit last week about, we were talking about Ted Lasso and some other stuff, but we were talking about the sort of ominous heaviness of mystery that like seems to be required by all shows. There's not really a mystery mm-hmm. to this show. There's just, it starts in the heart of darkness and it's on a voyage into the heart of even darker.
I mean, there's some machinations.
Sure.
Like what happened in Mr. Sumner, the surgeon's past. There's some stuff going on with insurance claims in the boat, but yeah, it's basically like, it's not a spoiler to say it about the show or about life in general that, oh, the real devils are men all along.
Right.
And that's what the show's about. But it is a very focused, so far, example of that. And to just add on to your Colin Farrell point, but people know. People that listen to this podcast know how much we love him as an actor. You and I both interviewed him on this podcast and others. We just are huge, huge fans and in almost everything he does. And yet still, even though, you know, I think one of the first pieces I wrote for Grantland was Colin Farrell as a character actor now. Mm-hmm. I still have some mental blocks where I'm like, he's so good. And I remember when he was the bright shining star that when I saw that he was in this, what, you know, relatively obscure British show that you can only get with an add-on subscription to Prime or to your Sundance Now, AMC Plus, whatever. I was like, well, he must be the star of the show. And then you watch the show and he's not, he's the heavy. And it suits him as a character actor, but I was also like, why is he doing this? Why would he join the show? And then you watch it and you realize that he is a harpoonist named Drax. And you're like, this is what actors want to do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like Jack O'Connell looks like a leading man, is a little bit more interesting, I think, which is what makes him a compelling actor. And he's doing a lot with what is the more traditional in some ways POV character.
Yeah.
But what all actors want to do, honestly, is grow their hair to Jason Momoa length and just, you know, hit people with bricks or and sometimes, you know, Arctic animals.
Yes.
And I no longer question why he took this role, because he is absolutely making a full meal of it. And
it's amazing. He's incredible.
No blubber.
Yeah, I'm really excited to keep watching it. So people should check it out if they may still have their AMC Plus subscription from watching The Bureau. If not, I highly recommend people check it out. We can wrap it up there. Andy and I will be back on Monday. We'll probably talk a little White Lotus. We'll probably talk a little... Well, there's a bunch of shows to talk about. Big August for us, probably, because we've got a lot of fun guests coming, and also like The Chair, Nine Perfect Strangers. There's a bunch of good shows coming on. So excited for the end of the summer.
I might get my microphone back, too.
Yeah, let's hope.
Who knows?
Thanks for bearing with us today on the audio day, and thanks to Kaya for producing. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Great. Have a great week. Have a great Friday. Have a great weekend, Baranskis. I don't even know if you can hear me, but if you could, I hope it's a good one.